Fresh from Low Carb Denver 2023, and the links are down below to the full 3-day conference video set. We have Sean Baker, MD, the big man himself. Great chat on, is meat bad or not? Here you go. I'm here at Low Carb Denver 2023, and I've just met up with the big man himself, Sean Baker, MD.
Ivor, thanks for chatting. Good to see you.
Great stuff. And you know what I think we'll do is we'll just talk through your talk you gave yesterday and anything else that comes to mind. We're just doing short little interview kind of vox pops.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, basically what I covered yesterday were, you know, some of the, you know, things we've seen using a carnivore diet now, you know, things that have gotten better, autoimmune disease, mental health disorders, diabetes, so on and so forth, all the stuff we've been talking about for a while. And, you know, much of the demonization of red meat, you know, some of the recent studies coming out showing that that's been based on basically really quote-unquote shoddy science, you know, really weak evidence. You know, the evidence to say that it's bad for us, whether it's cardiovascular disease or colorectal cancer, very weak evidence. We do have now in the literature some about 10 studies on the carnivore diet that have been done in the last 5 to 10 years. So presented some of that stuff. We talked about you know, the future, because Jeff wanted to talk about, Jeff Gerber, who put this on, wanted to talk about the future direction of nutrition. And we hear a lot of talk about alternative sources of protein and some of the problems we see that, you know, the CEO of Impossible Burger saying that by 2035, we're going to ban all animal agriculture. He made that statement in 2019. So now in 2023, we see that their company is laying off 20% of their staff and they're collapsing. So people have largely rejected this ultra-processed, plant-based kind of garbage, as we should. And so the next sort of challenge we'll see is the cellular agriculture. And so I talked about some of the limitations and problems associated with that. Most people, when they think about meat, they think about protein, some fat, a few vitamins and minerals. But actually, beef is a very, very complicated you know, collection of nutrients. There's something like 50,000 individual nutrients in beef, most of which we don't know what they do yet. And it will be very hard to replicate even on the cellular basis because those things will be just, they'll just feed them products. You know, you can't produce, you know, meat from a cellular agriculture out of air. You've got to feed that high levels of protein, probably coming from soybeans and pea protein and things like that, which requires tremendous, you know, fertilizer inputs, degenerative agriculture type thing. So it's not really an environmental win, and most likely it's going to be inferior to the real thing. So that's kind of the, you know, the majority of the talk I think I talked about.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that, Sean. So it's missing a vast array of nutrients. So when you look at the nutrient label, it's got a fair list, but it's missing all the ones that no one's even measuring that no doubt have crucial importance to our overall health, but they don't care. They just want the kind of the ticket item, the advertising campaign, and that's about it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because there was a nice study. There's a guy named Stefan Van Vliet. He was formerly out of Duke. He's now at Utah State. It's a study called Impossible to Go Beyond Beef, and they did a metabolomic analysis of an Impossible Burger versus a beef burger, and they found out that of the thousands of compounds that are in beef, only 10% of them are actually found in any significant quantity in the plant analog. And even though the nutritional labels are very similar, similar amounts of protein, similar amounts of fat, you know, it's not even close. There's nowhere that it's going to actually replace that. And so what we see as, you know, the metabolic health of this country and really the Western world is gone to hell. We have so much obesity and the mental illness that we see. Something like 1 in 4 people in the United States is on some sort of medication for mental illness. And that has, as Chris Palmer and others have pointed out, that there's a huge nutritional component to that. And as we further lower the quality of our nutrition by these ultra-processed, you know, fake meat products, it's just going to drive that worse. And when we have a society of all these mentally ill people, really stupid things happen. And we kind of experienced that for the last several years, as you're well aware of.
Yeah, for sure. And sadly, the more mental illness, the more depression, the more problems kind of psychologically, the more people will be open to the propaganda from this kind of quarter. And, you know, they IKEA, I noticed there just yesterday, is coming out and are reducing their meat content in their restaurants. And we've seen a few different businesses. This, for me, is all just politics, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a lot of these things, it's politically driven. It's not based on any realistic science, a real science, in my view. It's going to harm people in the long term. But, I mean, the problem is we are already in such a sad state that adding more processed food to it, it's hard to tell the effect on that. It's just more of the same. It's not going to reverse things. And so we're getting to where we're taught that obesity is a genetic disease, and there's nothing you can do about it. You know, you saw the Harvard doctor, Fatima Stanford saying that obesity, particularly in children, it doesn't matter if they eat a healthy diet, it doesn't matter if they exercise, just give them a shot, give them an Ozempic prescription at age 12. And so that's becoming this, they're laying the ground for that to be the expectation. So we have this in perpetuity pharmaceutical dependence for the entire population, which is a frightening thought.
Yeah, it is. And along with the last 3 years, we can see how much power can be brought to bear to bring us into bizarre, unscientific areas. And you know, the genetics one is such a joke because it's around 17,000 years for a genetic change or adaptation in a species. And what we've got is all of history, humans could control their weight automatically. We're well aware of that. And then around 40 or 50 years ago, it explodes. So the idea that it's genetic is just patently absurd.
Yeah, I mean, I would point to all the overweight and obese domestic cats and dogs. I mean, did their genetics change too? And we've got a pet. You know, it's interesting. I think something like 65% of domestic cats are considered obese, and something like 45 to 50% of dogs are considered obese. So maybe their genetics have changed too, or perhaps it's the fact that we're feeding them, you know, the kibble that we basically have the equivalent of human pet food that we're feeding humans, and that's the same issue.
Yep, that's it. Our dogs and cats just get meat only, and it's the way to go. We'll just finish up with one quick thing because we're running back soon. The vitamin C one is one of the most common things that comes up with carnivore. Can you get the vitamin C? And maybe just a quick word on that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it's been shown that humans via the red cell can actually recycle vitamin C. We also know that some of the functions of vitamin C, particularly its utilization in carnitine metabolism, when we consume carnitine, and carnitine is actually can be directly absorbed intact, so our carnitine levels go up. We know, for instance, that people on plant-based diets have much lower serum carnitine levels, which is actually associated with depression. And when you include meat in your diet, your carnitine level goes up. So the role for vitamin C, particularly with carnitine, is not as heavily required. The same thing with collagen production. Some of these collagen precursors, particularly hydroxyproline and hydroxylysine, also can be absorbed directly. There's transporters in the gut for that. So the role for vitamin C in that case is also not required as much. Also, vitamin C, as we know, is an antioxidant. Well, guess what happens a lot of times in lower carb diets? Our endogenous antioxidant system is already upregulated somewhat. So, and you know, the trade-off, we lost the ability to synthesize vitamin C about the same time we developed, or we lost the uricase enzyme. So we have a little bit higher levels of uric acid compared to other animals. Uric acid also is an antioxidant. So at the end of the day, I mean, we've known for well over 100 years that access to fresh meat both prevented and cured scurvy. So we're not seeing vitamin C deficiencies. I've not seen any bona fide vitamin C deficiencies in the literally thousands of people that I've seen do strict meat carnivore diets. So it is what it is. You know, there's probably a lot of explanations for it, but we're just not seeing it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not seeing it because likely it's not really there on a strict carnivore diet. Final thing, we've always, myself and Dr. Gerber in our book, essentially pushed no sugar, refined carbs, and seed oils, the devil's triad, processed food, and pretty much meat, fish, and eggs, and vegetables. So carnivore is working amazingly for people who have specific issues. But I think you'd probably agree meat and two veg, as per the old British thing, is probably the nominal, generic, ideal human diet. And carnivore brings some extra advantages for certain people and is a great thing to explore. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think it's very fair. I don't necessarily think vegetables are poison like some of the other folks in this space do. But, I mean, certainly I see people where the elimination of them, at least for a period of time, has been very beneficial. And things like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, some of the autoimmune issues, have responded to that for some period of time. And I usually tell people, you know, we're doing this for 3 to 6 months as an elimination phase, and then attempt to, you know, in a very systematic fashion to reintroduce things that you can tolerate. And I think most people that do carnivore, about 90% of them end up doing sort of this quote-unquote carnivore adjacent type thing, where it's mostly meat. The take-home message is meat is a health food and we should eat a lot of it. And then and if you eliminate junk food and replace it with some other whole food, you're going to do well, you know, generally for most people.
Perfect summary, Sean.
Thanks, Ivor. Thank you.
I love chatting with Sean, and I hope you enjoy that too. You know, he's a rock of sense and sound science. He's kind of a rock overall. And as always, huge thanks and appreciation to my many Patreon and PayPal supporters. Links are down below for anyone else who can help support the mission. And we need to get out there, get the best science, you know, well circulated, counter kind of legacy media misinformation and disinformation, the genuine versions of that that come from legacy media, which is sadly at this stage pretty much purchased by pharmaceutical, food industry and other advertiser interests, as well as more kind of malign influences even beyond that. So really appreciate the support and anyone who continue to support travel, investigations and getting the right material out there to keep the people informed. Thank you.